questions that he wanted me to answer for you. Now, I will say, in the first four of the questions, there is going to be one verse that I want you to keep in mind. And it's going to be operative in my answer to all four of the questions. And it's one of those verses in the Bible that if you haven't committed it to memory, it's well worth your while. It's Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, what has come famously to be called the Golden Rule. Jesus said, "Do to others as you would have them do to you," or "act toward others the way that you want them to act to you." The second part of the verse, by the way, is every bit as important as the first part. It will also explain why I'm very comfortable making one verse the focus of the entire morning. Jesus says in the second part of that verse, "This is the meaning of the law and the prophets." So basically what Jesus says is, you want to know what the Bible is all about? The whole thing, from Genesis to Revelation, all 66 books, here's one of those things. It is about treating people the way that you want to be treated. So you're going to hear a lot of that as we go through these questions. So here's the first one that your pastor, Chris, gave me and said, "I'd love for you to talk about this." In the first week of your series, you talked about being a church and a people who were a people of radical belonging or welcome, and how that's different than what goes on in the world around us. And he said, "Why don't you spend a few minutes talking to us about that?" Okay. I want you to think for a minute of an episode in your own life. Doesn't have to be here at church or at any church. I mean anywhere in your life, at a store, at a restaurant, at a dinner party, when you felt very welcome. Why did you feel so welcome? What happened? Now flip it. Give me the same kind of episode when you felt very unwelcome. And what was it that caused you to feel that way? Now hold those thoughts, because now we're going to apply it to you, the branch. You are what my church is. You are a small church. And small churches have certain characteristics. In fact, if you guys ever did a congregational assessment where all of you got to weigh in and say, "This is what we like the most about the branch. These are the things that make us come here." I'll go ahead and tell you right now, one of the things that you're going to say is, you like that you know each other. You like that you're a tight-knit community. And that it's nice to go to church with people where you know the faces and you know the names. And even if you're not best friends, you know pretty much everybody here. Every small church in America says that about itself. And it's a great thing. My church says that about itself, too. Yeah, but here's what's not said about small congregations. Small congregations are some of the most closed places you will ever experience in your life, relationally. You are, here's the technical term, my church is the same way, you are a closed relational system. Here's what that means. You already have your friends here. You know them. You hang out with them. You're in a missional community with them. You serve with them in Branch Kids or some other place. You know who your friends are and you're happy with them. Even your wider circle of acquaintances, it's already pretty full. You know a lot of people here and you've made all the connections that you want to make. And you don't know or you don't remember what it's like to be someone new here. And you think about yourself and you say about yourself, "Well, we're friendly as a church. I mean, come on, did you just see what happened? We were standing up and shaking each other's hands. And I whispered to Nate when I was sitting up here, it's like the best sound in church to just listen to that happen. But do you remember what it's like to be new? All they see is your backs turned to each other, greeting each other and talking to each other. Small churches are some of the hardest places to break into. So if you want to be a people of radical welcome, you have to do a few things. And these things are going to run counter to some of the things you like most about small church life. One of the things you have to do is when you envision all your relationships that you have here or elsewhere in your life, imagine them as a meal being had around a dining room table. And for most of us, our dining room table is full. There are 8 chairs around that table or 6 chairs around that table. If you have a really big dining room, maybe there's 12 chairs around that table. And there's a person in every chair. If you want to be a person in a church of radical welcome, one of those chairs has to be empty. And you have to be willing to keep a relational chair in your life empty in order for somebody you may not have even met yet to fill it. Because they may be somebody who has no one at their relational table, and they need you to make room at yours. You follow me? You have to be willing to befriend people who are not already your friends. You have to take the initiative. Somebody walks in here new for the first time on a Sunday morning. I don't care if you're the most introverted person in the room. You have to say to yourself, I am going to go and I'm going to talk to that person. Because it's all too easy and natural for us to gravitate to the people we already know. And like I said, you're a small church, just like mine. I guarantee you this is what usually happens. Because what we like about being a small church, right? Everybody here, it's everybody's job. It's not the greeting team's job. It's everybody's job to initiate with the people who are wanting to belong. And can you tell them what to do next? Is there a place, a group, a time for them to go next to get to know you better? And I don't mean hand them Pastor Chris's business card and say, you know, he'd love to have coffee with you. That is not what I mean. What I mean is maybe there's a couple of people here who have it on their heart that they are going to be the open hand of God to all the newcomers here. And they say, we're going to have a group that meets every other week, and the only people who are going to come are people who don't feel connected to anybody else or are new. And you say, every time you see someone who doesn't belong, you belong there. This is your place. This is what it takes. All too often, small churches especially, say about themselves, we are welcoming. And the truth is, we're not. Okay? Here's the second question. He asked me to talk about this concept, which was at the end of your first message in this series. How everybody lives in what he described as the already, not yet tension. That some of the kingdom of God has come through Jesus, and yet much of it has yet to be. And he said, why don't you spend a few minutes talking to us about that tension? Here's what I want you to know. Everyone in the room, to one degree or another, is on a spiritual journey at the beginning, the middle, the end of trying to follow Jesus. And that concept right there is one of the things that is most important for you to grasp as you grow more and more in your spirituality, in your life with Jesus. And the reason I know that is that there have been studies done on the norms of adult spiritual growth, and guys like James Fowler would say that. Which are you? Are you light or are you dark? Are you dead or are you alive? Are you light or are you a clay pot? Are you wise or are you a fool? I just gave you 4 either or pairs from the Bible itself. And in each case, the Bible would tell you, you're both. You're both at the same time. You're light and you're dark. You're dead spiritually and you're coming alive spiritually. You're wise and you're also a fool. Everybody in the room I'm looking at, I don't care who you are. I don't care how new you are to the Christian gig or not. Everybody in the room is light. There is a piece of you right now. There is a part of you in which God is active, through which God is active, by which other people experience God because of you. There is light in you. And what you need is people in your life who see that light and encourage you in it and fan that flame so it gets higher. That's part of what you should be doing for each other. Choosing to look at the light that all of you have. The flip side is just as equally true. I am looking at a room full of people who are, in part, just like me, dark. And I don't know where the dark places of your life are. I could, I won't, but I could be explicit with you this morning about the dark places of my life, the unredeemed places of my life, the unsaved, the unrescued, the dead places of my life. And here's what you have to know that is always going to be true for you. It doesn't matter if you're 20, doesn't matter if you're 40, doesn't matter if you're 70. Because you live here on planet Earth and you are in the process of becoming what someday in heaven you will be fully, there is always going to be a dark place in you. And this is hard for the most sincere and devout of us to grasp, or even to settle on, frankly. This is the tension that Chris describes in his question to me. It is hard to live with, frankly. I like seeing the light part of me. I hate seeing the dark part of me and knowing that it's there. However, here's what you get to realize. Because you are never not going to be dark, because you are never not in some part of your life, no matter how old you get, going to be a fool or a broken clay pot, what you realize is it's not about that. It's about grace. And the reason that I have no trouble admitting to you that I am far more dark than you might think is because God loves me anyway. And God always will. And He always has. And the part of me that is light is proof of that. Same with you. Now here's the key. Everybody else you know here at this church is the same way that you are. They're light and they're dark. And you need to apply what Jesus calls the golden rule to them as you interact with them and realize that all of you are in the great tension of being already and not yet. On the one hand, the golden rule tells you that you need to go out of your way to verbalize to people the light you experience in them. Most people around you run with what's called an encouragement deficit. They have had so many negative things said to them, or they feel so many negative things about their life, that the positivity is running ever so low. In fact, I don't know if it's true. I know that it's a cliche that psychologists tell you that for every negative thing that's ever been said to you, it takes 10 to cancel them out. If that's true, most people you know are running in negative numbers. So here's what you need to do for the people you know here. Don't just notice their generosity. Don't just notice their compassion. Don't just notice their joy. Don't just notice their service. Verbalize to them the light of Christ that you see in them. And in so doing, you are treating them the way that you long for people to treat you. We all want that and all desperately need it. Now here's the flip side. You are a person of darkness, just like I am. We pray over our lifetime that it gets a little less and less, but the truth is you're going to have to live with that fact as long as you're here. Everybody around you is the same way. Why don't we stop being surprised when we all make mistakes? Why don't we stop being surprised when we hurt each other's feelings? When my best friends don't act like it on any given day, and it makes me wonder whether or not the relationship is worth it. No, the golden rule tells me, yeah, I'm a person of darkness too. And odds are I've had those days when the other people around me question whether or not my presence in their life is worth it too. And I need to say to them, exactly what God says to me. I didn't come for the well. I came for the sick. What if you treated everybody around here like that? What a place of welcome, by the way, to go backward one question, and warmth and belonging. Golden rule tells you, realize that you and everybody you ever meet are in the already not yet tension. And you have to treat everybody in that same way. Here's the third question your Pastor Chris gave me. This is the second week of your series. You talked a lot about reaching out to the wounded and the unchurched. It's a value that your church and my church share. I don't know what the percentage is here. At my church, half of the people came to us from an unchurched place. And half of the people at our church, half of the adults at our church, were baptized at our church. I suspect it's pretty similar here. So how are your church and my church uniquely positioned to be a place of belonging and welcome for these kinds of folks? For starters, let's all admit something that we all know. It's West Michigan. It's a good bet that every unchurched person you know has interacted quite a bit with Christians and with churches. Yes? This is not like some of the places where I have been. Like most recently, I was a pastor in northern New Mexico. There are not that many churches, at least non-Catholic churches, in northern New Mexico. So I couldn't say that about here. I can about West Michigan, though, and you know it, right? Think about this for me. When you're hurt or you're wounded, what's that like? And it could be a physical pain that you're going through, or it could be something emotional, spiritual, deeper than that. What are the signs of that? What are the symptoms of that? How does that make you react to things? Let me suggest to you a few things. When you're in pain, you're very defensive. You ever been around a dog that was abused? I had a dog in northern New Mexico named Bullet, not because he was fast, but because he was shot, and he still had the bullet lodged in his chest. And he was like this. As long as we had him, sometimes that would hurt. Physically, it would hurt him, but of course it was a lot deeper than that. The abuse that he suffered hurt him. And so he would cower in the corner. And even my wife and I, who loved him the most, in those moments, had to give him space. Well, you're like that when you're hurt. Hey, guess what? So's the other people around you that we're trying to reach in the name of Jesus. They're hurt. That means they're going to be sometimes in a pretty hostile, defensive place. If you and I want to reach people like that, you have to understand that and not be put off by it. Just like you want people, when you're hurt, to treat you that way, the golden rule says understand that about them too. So when they come here and they keep you at arm's length, or they ask you a really loaded question that either A, you don't have an answer to, or B, you don't want to answer because you know there's no right answer at all, don't be put off. They're in pain. This is what people in pain do. Another thing that you and I do when we're in pain is we think that everybody else around us wants us to get better faster than we actually can. Haven't you ever, at some point in your life, it doesn't matter if it was a physical hurt or something that's non-physical, had someone say to you or certainly insinuate to you, aren't you already over that yet? You know what that's like, right? To have somebody say that to you? You know how it makes things worse for you, not better. Well, guess what? As you reach the people around you who have been hurt by Christians or turned off by the church, they're no different. And you may find that they're standoffish for a long time. You may find that they only take a step every so often into the faith and into your community. Don't rush them. Say to them what you wish somebody would say to you. We know you're hurt. And in some cases, we know you're hurt deeply. And we are so sorry that of all people, the people of Jesus did that to you. You take all the time you need to heal. And we're going to walk alongside you while you do. That's what you want when you're hurt. We can do that for them. Here's the last one. Just one more. When you're hurt, this is especially true when it's a non-physical, emotional, or spiritual hurt, you want to know you're not the only one. Because, boy, sometimes it feels that way. If you know what it's like to struggle, for instance, with a mental illness, anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, given the numbers, by the way, yeah, there are some of you out there today for whom that is true. One of the things about mental illness is it's isolating. You think you're the only one, and nobody else's experience of it is like yours, right? Yeah, well, that's not true. And when you open up to people or you talk to your therapist, you find that out to be the case. Same thing is true with spiritually wounded people, the people you and I are trying to reach. They think they're the only one, that their experience was unique. No, that's not true. Our English word vulnerability is built off of a Latin word. And the Latin word from which it comes is simply the word wounded. To be vulnerable is for me or you to expose our own wounds. So when you're talking to the person you're trying to reach, you don't hesitate when the moment is right, when it's appropriate, to talk openly about how you've been hurt in a similar way or to a similar degree as them, maybe even by Christian people. You're not demeaning Christian people, but you're saying, yeah, sadly, your experience is more of a universal experience than you might know. And frankly, a lot of us here at the branch, we are here because we are trying to build something that doesn't do that to people, where we are safe for each other. This is what we do here. If you're going to reach wounded people, it's going to be messy. You get that, right? Most people love to talk about reaching unchurched people. And it stops after they walk forward, raise their hand, and say, I do, to Jesus. No, the process is so much more messy than that because life and our wounds are more messy than that. You know that from your own experience. You're going to have to offer them exactly what you wish other people would offer you. Here's the fourth question that your pastor Chris gave me. And this has to do with the conversation that I know you guys are beginning about homosexuality and what Christians think or ought to think about it. And he asked me to address that a little bit for you. What you may not know that he does is that we of a church have already done what you guys are about to do. So you guys are in the survey phase, I know. And then you're going to collate those surveys and you're going to talk more about those survey results. Yeah, we did all that 2 years ago. Our culture at our church is one where once a year for about 2 months, six to eight weeks, we dedicate Sunday mornings to talk about anything our people want to talk about. And they tell me what it is. And I think in the 8 years that I've done this, we have talked about every single solitary hot potato that you should not talk about in church. Like politics, like are people of other faiths going to go to heaven? Like, is there space in the Christian understanding of creation for evolution? And can we agree or disagree about that? And you think, okay, why on earth do you do that, number one? And number two, how is your head firmly still attached to your neck at this point? Well, I think it's because we're trying to do what you guys are trying to do. The reason we do what we do is that we recognize at a very basic level that the American church, about subjects like this, the American church is far more American than it is the church. Remember that. You live in a country that is polarized. If you don't believe, well, I don't have to convince you of that, given what's going on politically in our country. We live in a country that by its culture is polarized. We believe that there are certain issues about which we fundamentally disagree, and therefore there is no compromise, there is no dialogue. If you are not on my team, then you are the enemy. And sadly, in church, when it's about issues like this, that is exactly how we treat each other. We treat each other like Americans, not the church. So what you are doing or attempting to do is something that is truly countercultural. The title of your series this month has been Salt and Light. You want to be the city on a hill that at night is lit up for everybody to see? This is one of the great ways for you to do that, because it is countercultural. Apply the golden rule here for me about this. Do unto others as you would have them do to you. Because Jesus says the whole stinking Bible is about that. Okay, how does that work with this? For starters, you should assume that everybody here is earnestly seeking to understand what the Scripture has to say and how it applies. And that means the people who don't come to the same conclusions as you. It's not as if we all seek the truth together and eventually are all going to agree on something like that. That is not how it works. So what you have to assume is everybody here is going to think that you're working hard to understand this complicated issue, and you're going to do them the justice of doing the very same thing. And if they don't come to the conclusion that you do, that's okay. Another thing that the golden rule would tell you is that you need to keep this issue in proper perspective. There are a great many churches. In fact, I would think that Pastor Chris, has told you that our own denomination is doing what I'm about to say, unfortunately. They have chosen to make this issue the flag or banner issue about which they will live or die. This is the hill on which they're going to stand, come hell or high water. They have brought it to the center of the conversation about the Christian faith. They have said this issue is definitive. And what you say as a church or a Christian person about this issue tells me everything I need to know about you. Really? What Bible do they have? Because mine doesn't read that way. And yours doesn't either. Mine reads like the golden rule. Do unto others as they would do to you. So what you have to do for each other is keep things in proper proportion or size. Of course it's important that we talk about this. Of course it's important of all places that we can do that here among God's safe, peace-making people. Sure. But this is not going to cost you my friendship. This is not going to cost you my love. This is not going to cost you our service and kingdom work together, our mission as the branch church. Those are the important, essential things, not this. Are you kidding me? No. And please don't miss it. The golden rule would also say to you, however you wish you yourself were treated, that is exactly how you should treat the people who are gay around you. And I'm not going to tip my hand to you about what I think about that issue. Actually, what I think about that issue is not informed at all. It's not coming to bear at all in my application of the golden rule. Let's say, hypothetically, you're one of those people who think that the Scriptures clearly teach that homosexuality is unbiblical. Okay, you've heard me say, I think you can, I will allow you to come to that conclusion. A lot of people do, that's okay. You still are obligated to exercise the golden rule toward homosexual people. Okay, you get that, right? And how would you like other people in your life to treat you? You'd like them to value you. You'd like them to see the light of God in you and how you serve and care for other people. You'd like them to befriend you, to be kind to you, to be nice to you, to include you. Do you see that? The golden rule informs this every bit as much as whether or not you think homosexuality is biblically endorsed or not. When Chris and I see each other in a month or two or three, I'm going to ask him what this conversation was like here. And one of the things I would like him to be able to report back to me is, you know what, it was great. We listened, we talked, we dialogued, we didn't all agree. But what we did do is we treated each other with respect and compassion. And we valued each other and each other's perspective as much as we did our own. And in so doing, we lived out together the golden rule of Jesus, even about this particular issue. So there is a fifth question, but I talked too long about the first four, so I'm not going to be able to get to it. It has to do, I'll let you see it if you want. It has to do with actually what we've been talking about at my church for the month of September, which has to do with motivation. What actually motivates us to work hard in the kingdom of Jesus and the things that don't. I guess here what I'll make you, the offer that I'll make him when I talk to him about this morning, I'll send you something in writing about this if it interests you. Because it's kind of surprising what you find actually works in motivating us long term and what doesn't. So I'll see if I can answer that for you guys in another format, or he can pass on what he's learned from me about it to you guys in another way. One of the joys that we have today, and I'm going to go ahead and say we're transitioning to communion, so the worship team, you guys need to come on back up here. He and I get to lead communion at each other's church for the first time. Let me go ahead and say to you what I told him he should go ahead and say to my people. I'm going to do this wrong, okay? You guys especially, you do it every week, so I am not going to do it the way probably that is your norm, so cut me a little slack. I am here enough with you guys that I want you to know that one of the things, one of the many